was growing up in Saskatoon, I was what you call a tomboy because I didn't relate to being feminine in the clothes that I wanted to wear or how I behaved. I had my hair cut short. I loved to rough and tumble with my older brothers. My sister, who was 2 years older than me, loved dresses. She was the feminine one. I recently ran across a photo of the two of us taken when I was 6 and she was 8. It was in the summertime. We were standing out in our backyard. The grass was so green. Our mom had made matching dresses for us. You know, the A-line frame, sleeveless, horizontal colored, multicolored stripes. When I look at the photo, I see my sister standing there. You know, her leg cocked, just like the models have, and I'm standing there. I could see that I was there under protest. But my mom had gone to all that work making those dresses, and I love my mom. So I put the dress on, and I wore it for whatever family function there was. And then afterwards, I can just imagine myself running to my room, taking the dress off, putting on shorts and a t-shirt, so, you know, clothes I could actually do stuff in. When I reflect back on it now, I think why I preferred being a tomboy is that in the late 1960s, boys got to do more interesting things. Explore the forest, get dirty, play physical games. Although my mom was the heart of our family, when I looked around as a kid, it was the males in the household who had more power. As the youngest of 9 kids, I know it always gets a ooh. 5 brothers, 3 sisters. I was the runt of the litter. So I wanted to be taken seriously. I wanted to be independent. So being a tomboy fit with those goals. And I also just really didn't like pink froofy dresses. I didn't then. I don't now. No offense to those who like them. I love seeing them on other people. When I was growing up, there were very clear boxes of what people now talk about as gender identity. That refers to an individual's sense of being a man, a woman, neither of those, queer, and so on. It's one's inner sense of being and one's own understanding of how one relates to that gender, what we often think of as a binary, male, female, but it's not. It's so much more splendid than that. There's also gender expression. That's how people manifest their masculinity, femininity, their way of being queer in the world, whether they don't even want to relate to any of that. They have their own way. All of that. How do they manifest that in how they appear, how they behave, how they dress, how they speak, and so many more ways? Gender expression refers to how a person expresses their gender identity or the cues that people use to identify gender, like in the story about dresses being for girls. I understood myself as a female, a girl, that was my gender identity. But the way that that was played out at that time period, that's where my gender expression was different than a typical girl. That's why I acted like a tomboy. In those days, when it was 40 degrees below in the winter in Saskatoon, my older sister had to wear pants to high school underneath her dress, go to the washroom, take off the pants, because girls weren't even allowed to wear pants, only dresses. How many people had that experience? Yeah. It's hard to believe when you hear about that today. Young people just shake their heads. Now, I was accepted as a tomboy by my family and friends. Unlike the character of Bailey in the story, when I first read that story and remember recoiling when the mother said, "Bailey, what are you talking about? You're a boy. Boys don't wear dresses." "But I don't feel like a boy," Bailey said. "Well, you are one, Bailey, and that's it. Now go away. And don't mention dresses again." "There," says the mother, who dismisses her child for who she really is. How heartbreaking. And yet, that mother was brought up in a certain culture at a certain time. How do we get beyond that? How do we get beyond those boxes for gender identity? What will help us recognize and accept that variety that exists in our world of people's different understanding of who they are and how they want to behave and dress? I ask myself, what causes people to hate others who find themselves outside those socially constructed boxes? And what kind of fears underlie that anger? Fear of difference? If we all think through our own lives and the gender exploration many of us went through during our lifetimes, we may begin to open up to the various other ways that people have of expressing who they are. So I invite you to think back when you were growing up. How did you develop your sense of gender identity? Who influenced it? Did you have parts of you that weren't encouraged or were actively discouraged, like Bailey's family? Was there someone in your life, like the older girl, Laurel, who actually appreciated and valued you just as you are? As you get older, are there things that have happened that have affected your sense of gender identity? For example, I know for some women, going through menopause affects their sense of being a woman, or losing a breast to breast cancer. What's it like for men when they go through prostate cancer? What influences our understanding of who we are and other people's understanding of who we are? As Unitarians, we affirm as our first principle that all people have worth and dignity simply because they are human beings. The idea inspired our social justice work over the centuries. In the anti-slavery movement, the civil rights movement, rights for gays and lesbians, and for people from various cultural and economic backgrounds. It also includes people of various gender identities and gender expressions. How can we extend our welcome to include us all? Now, Beacon was officially designated a welcoming congregation in 2004, 11 years ago. Now, I'm pointing to this because that's the official recognition. So if you haven't seen it before, please, I invite you after the service to come and read it. So what is a welcoming congregation in Unitarian circles? First launched in 1990 in North America, this Unitarian Universalist program grew out of an understanding that widespread prejudices and ignorance about lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, and queer, LGBTQ people, that existed within our Unitarian congregations. And that ignorance and misunderstandings resulted in the exclusion of LGBTQ people from our congregations. The process to become a welcoming congregation involved an education program in the congregation, and a certain number of people had to take it, as well as a congregational vote to affirm that the congregation would work towards becoming more welcoming and inclusive of people with marginalized sexual orientations and gender identities. So if you're willing, hands up for those who'd been in that original education program here at Beacon 11 years ago. So how many people? So look around. That's not that many. 11 years is a long time. Today, 99% of Canadian Unitarian congregations are recognized as welcoming congregations. And the last congregation is doing the program right now. So we're aiming towards 100%. And that's something I think we do need to feel good about. And how many congregations like Beacon or the Comox Valley, who I serve, who did it the year before, how many need a refresher course to include people I think that Canada becoming a country that legalized equal marriage, more people have become familiar with issues facing gay and lesbian people. But I've only noticed in the last few years that issues facing transgender people are now more in the public discourse. That's why I thought I'd offer to do the service on this topic today. I'm not an expert in the area. I'm a learner on the journey, just as you are. I look forward to hearing from you after the service in the fellowship time downstairs, what your experiences have been and what you've learned about transgender people and your road to becoming more welcoming. Or if you're a transgender person, what has it been like to be here or be in the world? When I was doing some research for this service that I'm doing now, a couple of years ago at Comox, I discovered that the month prior to my service, on March 21st, 2013, a private member's bill on transgender rights by federal New Democrat MP Randall Garrison passed in the House of Commons, making it illegal to discriminate against transgender people in Canada. I was so pleased to hear about that. And then I did more research for this service. And I read an article that's from July 31st of this year that made me feel otherwise. The article stated that the federal transgender rights bill died in the Senate earlier this year. Now, how that didn't get out in the news, did it? BC, this is a Globe and Mail article. It pointed out that BC is among only a few provinces that have not amended their human rights legislation to include special protections for transgender people. Since 2012, did somebody say it's been changed? Oh, I'd be so happy. I'd be very surprised. Now, this was July, so who knows? We can go and research when we get home. Since 2012, six provinces, including Ontario, Manitoba, and Saskatchewan, and one territory have moved to make that kind of change for special protection. The Globe and Mail article quotes Spencer Chandra Herbert, who's an opposition New Democrat MLA. Spencer says, "You'd think that BC would maybe have some shame that it's not working to support human rights while the rest of Canada is." Chandra Herbert has tried three times to introduce a bill to add gender identity, comma, and gender expression to the Human Rights Code list of banned forms of discrimination, which already includes sex, race, and sexual orientation. Spencer says, it's five words and a comma. It wouldn't cost the government anything to do it, and it would make a world of difference for transgender people. I support having a bill both federally and provincially. And I must say, I am particularly proud of that MLA. He's my nephew. So I support him, both in my heart and philosophically. Our society is starting to make steps to change some of the issues of that transgender people face. To really achieve these changes, there does need to be good education. In the past 10 years or so, I've come to learn more about some of the issues facing transgender people. As a minister in the congregations that I've served, I have met and gotten to know several people of various ages who are transgender and learned what it meant for each of them. I walked with them along the journey, each with their own unique experience, needs, expression, and personhood. And I'm still learning about what gender identity and gender expression means for each person. As part of my education a couple of years back, I watched an interesting 70-minute documentary. It was made actually by a Vancouver filmmaker, Gwen Hayworth. I highly recommend it. It's called She's a Boy I Knew, a film about love, family, and transsexuality. Has anybody here seen it? A couple people have. It's actually in the Vancouver Public Library, so you can borrow it. Gwen's film is inspiring, humorous, heartbreaking, and uplifting. It makes this topic very real and accessible to us living here on the BC coast. Gwen's story is of growing up as Steve, an average hockey-playing boy in Vancouver, then to the time when, as a 20-something young married man, he could no longer live with smothering what is a core part of his identity. He knew since he was 4 years old that his gender identity as a male did not match who he knew himself to really be, female. So when he finally had the courage to talk to his wife, best friend, parents, and sisters about this part of himself, they all went through a lot together. In the film, they are very honest when talking about that process. It shows the empowerment that came when that human being finally made the choice to be who she really is. Now, in Gwen's case, legally becoming female through surgery and a name change. It was a long and difficult, but ultimately necessary road for Gwen to psychologically survive and flourish. It was a real education to watch. To update my knowledge, this past week I was reading an online Trans 101 prepared by Jody Marksamer and Dylan Vade. They explain, there's no prototypical transgender experience. There's an endless variety of transgender bodies, an endless variety of transgender identities, and an endless combination of the two. There are so many ways to arrive at being transgender, to arrive at being a transgender, and of being transgender. Some transgender people are assigned female at birth, know from day one that they're male, describe their experience as being a man trapped in a woman's body, and live their life as a heterosexual man. Now, this narrative is perpetuated, reinforced, and rewarded by the medical and psychological establishment. It has every validity, but it's only one experience. Many transgender people share only some part or no part of that narrative. Many transgender people live happy lives prior to transition. Not all transgender people feel uncomfortable in their bodies and want to alter them. Not all transgender people have the same identification through their lives. Endless narratives exist. I especially appreciated their note here on spectrums and lines. There are women, there are men, these are two options among a million. Female and male are not two endpoints on a line. There is no line, no spectrum. Gender is much, much bigger than a line. We cannot order people on a scale of masculinity and femininity. Gender is, at least, a three-dimensional space that allows motion. One way to picture gender is a gender galaxy, a space with an infinite number of gender points that can move and that are not hierarchically ordered. The Unitarian Universalist Association created a useful handout for congregations called Transgender 101, Transgender Identity, Welcome, and Resources. I'm going to send to Joan to put out on your, what did you call it, your beacon? And beacon this week and through your Facebook, the actual link to it. But for those who don't have so much access to computers, we've got three copies of each that we'll put on the back table. We know that language changes in society, and I found it useful to look at what's commonly used today. There's one thing on that handout when I read it a couple of years ago that was new to me. Cisgender as a term. How many people had heard of that term before? A number of you. Cisgender, or cis, is a term that is becoming increasingly popular to describe people who are not trans or gender variant. In other words, those whose gender identities, presentations, and behavior match, according to our gender understanding, the sex they were assigned at birth. CIS, cis, is a prefix with roots that mean on the same side. So trans and cis are neutral descriptors, analogous to the prefixes of homo and hetero. So because my biological sex is the same as my biological identity, I'm cisgender. And because I'm attracted to people of the opposite sex, I'm heterosexual. Just like cisgender people, transgender people can have any sexual orientation, lesbian, gay, bisexual, straight, queer, or not even fitting into those specific categories. Some transgender people are lucky in the support that they get, like Gwen in the movie. Others are not so lucky. Many trans kids have a very hard time, are bullied at school, sometimes rejected by family and friends. The Globe and Mail article I read mentions that the statistics show about half of transgender people attempt suicide. Many suffer from depression. You may know someone who's been harassed or suffered in some way from being transgender. And if you are transgender, you have your own personal experiences. I've really learned so much from each transgender person I've met that I should not assume what that means to them. Just like I wouldn't assume something from you just because I know one quality. One person, a transgender person said to me, you know, it's just one quality about me, just like being divorced, right? How many of us would want to be known by one quality and be approached just for that? Instead, I don't go to meet someone just because they're transgender. I want to meet them as a person and get to know them and have me share my experiences about who I am. It's been 11 years since this congregation became a welcoming congregation. The UUA has some useful suggestions. Some of them are listed in that handout. Here's a couple I just want to mention. Practice offering your own preferred pronoun when you meet new people. So, for example, I wrote preferred pronoun she. How many people at the BC Fall Regional Gathering were here? How many people were here? Just you. So they actually asked us to do that, is to put on our name tags, which was so good. It got us all talking about how we understand gender identity and expression. Avoid making assumptions about gender identity or gender expression or sexual orientation. Use terms that encompass all genders rather than only two, that binary. Children instead of boys and girls. People instead of women and men, siblings instead of brothers and sisters. There are so many ways to incorporate training for our leadership, our greeters, about how to be welcoming, especially around gender identity and gender expression. Is it time for the congregation here to go through that refresher course? I invite you to talk about it and share with your leadership your ideas of what you would like to be so you can extend your welcome. I'd like to close with a poem about newcomers written by Liz James, a Unitarian from Saskatoon. It's called Handwoven. Because our faith cannot be found in any book or any temple held deep, it is most visible in the spaces between us, when our hands touch in greeting, when our voices interweave. So much a part of daily living, we forget there are people who never imagine this is possible, who sit in the corner of a service with eyes filled with tears and dream of belonging here. What a tragedy if even one melts away unwelcomed only because we could not hear their dreams. It's up to us who are already here to reach across that space between us so our hands can touch in greeting, our hearts unfold to one another, respecting each person as we uniquely are. So might it be. Amen. I invite you now to take some time of reflection. to enter into your own thoughts and feelings, to settle into your own skin for who you are deep within, who you know yourself to be. Bring compassion to yourself and those around you. Notice the gentle quiet that meets you just under the surface of your breath. Let us pause now to enter into that gentle quiet where healing happens. Let us enter that silence together.